Welcome to Component 7, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is Unit 7, Networks and Networking, Part 1. This unit is in 5 parts. The objectives of this unit include gaining the ability to understand the history of networks and their evolution, list and describe the various types of network communications, list and describe the various forms of network addressing, including DNS. List and define the different types of networks. Describe different network topologies. List and describe different network standards and protocols. Describe wireless communication. List and describe the network hardware. And finally, explain networking logical model concepts. In Part 1, we will focus on concepts related to the first two objectives. It is appropriate to begin our discussion with the definition of a network. According to Wikipedia, a network is a collection of computers and devices connected by communications channels that facilitates communication among users. It allows users to share resources with other users. Note that in English, we would say that a network is comprised of computers, printers, and other devices, and some sort of media. The term media means cabling and/or the ability to communicate wirelessly, which allows all of the devices to communicate with each other. If you would like to read more about computer network basics, see Wikipedia's web link in the slide notes. To visualize what a moderate network would look like, examine the figure on the screen where we have two regional offices connecting to the head office. Remote users, those working at home, or traveling salespeople also need to connect to the head office. Note that they are connecting through the internet and that the ISP devices shown in the figure are interconnecting all of the sites. Additionally, the routers at the regional offices are connecting to a router at the head office. If you click the link shown at the bottom of the slide, you can get more details about this type of a network. It may seem odd to ask why networks exist, yet networks did not exist in the home or workplace not too long ago. We were not sharing printers and scanners so that perhaps 100 people could use one printer. Nor were we using servers to share software, reducing the cost of business. We were not sharing files such as pictures and music, spreadsheets and documents. And imagine life without email. We must have networks to facilitate email use. Network phones, phones that use IP addressing, live chat, instant messaging, and all of the things that are ubiquitous today did not exist just a generation ago. All of this is possible because of a networking infrastructure. It is important to point out that networks decrease costs to business, people, and government. For example, what was once printed documentation can now be located digitally on a web server. This means that we no longer need to update documentation physically. We can update a web page and then notify users of the changes. In the past, technical support teams printed documentation and kept copies at their desks so that they could answer questions that came in from customers. Anytime there was a change to the documentation, someone had to reprint and distribute it to perhaps 200 technical support agents. Web servers have eliminated that effort and cost. Because of networking, we also have email, which is electronic paperwork. Email has eliminated the need for inter-office paper memos, for example. Finally, it is easier to keep device software current. Network administrators no longer need to physically visit each device to manage it or to upgrade its software. Through networking, administrators can locate a device, connect to that device, and then make changes to it. In addition, networks serve customers. For example, documentation can be posted to and maintained on online web pages. Customers can be notified of changes by email. Even if we do not notify customers about changes, they will always have the latest information when they visit those specific web pages. Customers can chat or email with customer service representatives. Today, it is common to find live chat services with vendors where customers can have their questions answered in real time, as opposed to using email, which may take a vendor several days to respond to. Lastly, customer service reps have access to a common network database containing solutions to common customer requests or issues. In the past, as I mentioned previously, support representatives might have had printed documentation at their desks when we were providing tech support to customers. Since this method of providing support is not cost-effective, it is rare to find reps using printed material anymore. Another advancement is the ability to input solutions to customer issues in a database and record whether or not a particular solution was successful. If a solution is unsuccessful and does not solve an associated problem, it can easily be replaced in the database with a solution that is successful, which helps companies improve customer satisfaction. In addition, hospitals can store all patient data in one common network database, which improves the quality of care. Medical staff and patients can access electronic medical records stored in a network database as well. In some cases, a medical staff person, for example a nurse, might walk into a room. When the nurse walks into the room, through the use of an employee badge, all of the information that the nurse needs to see related to that patient can be flashed on a screen in that room. In addition, the patient can see the name of the nurse on another screen. Again, all of this is accomplished by a network. Devices such as scanners, printers, and computers connect to a network using a wired and/or wireless connection. The network to which those devices are connected may or may not be connected to the Internet. An Internet connection requires the use of an Internet Service Provider, or ISP. For example, from home, if you want access to the Internet, you need to purchase a service plan from an ISP that allows you to connect to the Internet. On the other hand, an intranet connection does not connect a device to the Internet. For example, the network at your place of work is an example of an intranet. If your place of work then needs to have access to a web server at Google or the like, then it would need an Internet connection. An intranet, however, can connect various offices together regardless of their location without providing Internet access. Wired connections require that devices have a NIC installed. A NIC is a network interface card. You might have a wireless or a wired NIC. Since we're talking about wired connections, the wired NIC must provide a port for the network cable to connect into. We also need copper cabling, Category 6 cable, for example, a switch, which allows devices within a home office, for example, to communicate with each other, and a router. A router allows your home to communicate via the Internet. Your cable modem router is an example of a modem router. Home routers also contain switch ports, and so in these cases your router acts as both a switch and a router. You might plug your computer into a switch port on the router, and then connect the router to the cable that comes from your ISP to get to the Internet. For wireless connections, we require that devices have a wireless NIC. We need a wireless access point, which is a wireless router, a switch, and perhaps some other type of router. Again, most wireless routers contain a few switch ports. You can also connect using fiber. In this case, if we use fiber to connect devices, then we need to purchase and install a fiber NIC, fiber optic cables, a switch that provides fiber ports, and a router that provides fiber ports. Most routers and switches do not contain fiber ports, and these ports can substantially increase the cost of these devices. When we talk about networking, we also need to discuss bandwidth and throughput. Bandwidth is the highest number of bits that can be sent at any one time. Throughput, on the other hand, is the amount of bandwidth that is available for actual network communications. For example, the bandwidth of your network at home might be 100 megabits per second if you're using typical network cabling. Because of physical limitations in the copper and other required network traffic and communication, The throughput is usually only about 70 megabits per second. Therefore, you lose about a third of your bandwidth due to what is referred to as communication overhead. The speed at which bits are passed from source to destination, for example, from your computer to your sister's computer, is influenced by the network media. Copper wire speed is commonly 100 or 1,000 megabits per second. Note that 1,000 megabits per second is 1 gigabit per second bandwidth. Wireless speed, on the other hand, is typically much slower. Currently, wireless speed runs at approximately 54 megabits per second, although the Draft N wireless standard offers approximately 200 megabits per second speed. Fiber optic cable offers the same speeds as copper wiring, but can travel much longer distances. If you look at the images shown on the screen in the bottom left corner, there are two fiber optic cable connectors displayed. On the left, within that image, there are fiber LC connectors. On the right, within that image, are what is referred to as SC connectors. The meaning of the fiber connector acronyms is not important at this point. The fiber connector ends each plug into a fiber port. Notice the white caps found at the very end of the LC and SC connectors. These cover up the ferrules, or the very end of the fiber optic connector, in which there is a plastic or glass solid core. Laser light is shined into the core, and the photons are passed from end to end. The image on the right depicts a copper wire with an RJ45 jack. This copper wire has 8 individual wires, each covered with a sheathing to protect each individual wire. Look at the RJ45 jack. At its very end, you'll see a number of colored wires. These are the 8 copper wires through which electronic impulses pass. If you become a networking specialist, you will learn how to create these types of cables. Internet access providers, also known as Internet Service Providers or ISPs, connect users to the Internet. At your home, you most likely have a contract with an ISP that allows you to connect to the Internet using their services. In fact, access to the Internet globally revolves around the use of ISPs. As depicted in the figure shown on the slide, ISPs are organized as local, regional, and national providers. You may even add international providers to that last group. A Tier 1 ISP is a large national or international provider. A Tier 2 or regional ISP connects a local ISP to Tier 1 ISPs. Local ISPs are referred to as Tier 3 ISPs. As you are most likely aware, devices commonly connect to the Internet via dial-up, broadband, Wi-Fi, satellite, or 3G connection types. Let's look at each of these in a little more detail. Dial-up connections use copper phone lines to connect to an ISP's modem. This speed, or bandwidth, is limited to 56 kilobits per second. This is the slowest and most frustrating connection type. Broadband connections have higher quality copper phone lines, perhaps coaxial cable, also known as coax cable, and perhaps fiber optic connection types. Broadband is faster than dial-up, and it runs in the approximate speed range of 768 kilobits per second or higher. Wi-Fi is a wireless connection type, and it refers to the IEEE 802.11 standard that governs wireless technologies. The IEEE is the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, a global standards organization. This organization creates and publishes standards that relate to the various types of network connections. The IEEE is heavily involved in many networking and electronic standards. Wi-Fi is typically used to connect laptops to wireless access points. The wireless access point, in turn, is then connected to the wired network, usually through a switch or some type of an ISP router. Wi-Fi is used quite a bit in hotels and airports. In fact, in most hotels, you are able to gain access to the Internet using some type of a Wi-Fi connection. many small regional airports are providing free Wi-Fi access to flyers waiting in terminals, whereas larger airports view this as a revenue opportunity. Wireless speeds can range anywhere from 1 megabit per second, which is extremely slow, to well over 200 megabits per second, depending on the standard. If the standard is 802.11b, for example, then this most likely is somewhere around 54 megabits per second, depending on the laptop's and/or the wireless device's proximity to the wireless access point. The farther you get away from a wireless access point, the lower your network speed or bandwidth will be. If you connect to a wireless access point at 1 megabit per second, you're too far away and need to move closer. If your NIC is an 802.11b or an 802.11g, then you are most likely connecting at approximately 50 megabits per second. This means that you are in good proximity to the access point and that you have a decent wireless connection. Many connect to the internet and even receive television signals via satellite. With a satellite connection, the home or office device makes a connection to a ground satellite dish, and then the satellite dish sends the signal to a satellite that is orbiting the Earth. The orbiting satellite then relays the signal to another ground satellite dish, and so on. This can be somewhat of a slow connection because of the time it takes to make a round trip. The loss of speed introduced in this type of communication is referred to as latency. The third generation of standards that governs mobile communications is known as 3G, with speeds ranging from 2 to 5 megabits per second, depending on the plan, cost, and location. As most of you are probably aware, smartphones and the tablet devices use 3G technologies to provide internet access to devices that subscribe to their plan. ISPs lease public internet protocol or IP addresses to subscribers. Your home or business network usually utilizes private IP addressing. The ISP typically leases your location one public IP address. The ISP's equipment is provided with a public IP address to connect to the ISP's public network. The ISP also provides equipment with a private IP address so that it can connect to your network. As you see from this discussion, an IP address is generally defined as public or private. Private IP addresses have no real-world meaning and are indeed invalid outside of their network. For example, you may have three computers and a printer as part of your home or small office network. All of these devices are configured with private IP addresses. The devices are configured by you manually assigning the address to the device, or by dynamically receiving the address from a router. As I mentioned, your cable modem router has both a public and a private IP address. A private IP address is used to communicate with your home computers and printer. All of these devices are configured with private IP addresses. Private IP addressing is used on home networks and office intranets. An example of a private IP address that you might see on your home network is 192.168.10.1 through and including 192.168.10.254. This is one example of a private IP public address range. There are more. The public IP address, on the other hand, is used to communicate with devices that are on the internet. On the internet, all devices possess and are assigned public IP addresses. An example of a public IP address is 68.12.13.14. There are literally millions of public IP addresses. Since your ISP's equipment, in this case we're using the example of a cable modem router, is programmed with or possesses both a public and private IP address, the ISP's equipment must be able to translate addressing between the private and public networks. ISPs generally provide you with a public IP address that may change from day to day. This is known as a dynamic IP address. Most home IP addresses are dynamic IP addresses. In other words, if you reboot your ISP's equipment, that equipment may reboot and come back with a different public IP address. This really is not important unless you do work that requires you to possess an IP address that never changes. If you need an IP address that never changes, your ISP can lease you such an address for the duration of your contract. This is known as a static IP address. By definition, a static IP address will not change. Indeed, internet websites use static IP addresses so that their domain names are reliably mapped to one public IP address. ISPs charge more each month for static IP addresses. The charge ranges from $5 to over $100 per month, depending on service provider. ISPs are glad to lease one or more static IP addresses to customers because they charge extra for this service.